You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
Welcome back, everybody, to tonight's live broadcast of TPC. You know, if it's December, we're going to be playing some Christmas music on this particular broadcast, and we are thankful for everyone tuned in locally, our flagship station here in Memphis, AM 1600, and abroad. People posting on Twitter tonight, all the way down in Brazil, tuned in live this evening with their TPC paraphernalia. And it's my honor to welcome to the program. This night is our featured guest, Patrick Casey. Patrick is the Executive Director of Identity Europa, and we look forward to learning more about the organization before moving on to broader topics, current events, and the like. Patrick, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well, James. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on. Let's first start with the group and what's been going on with IE, and then we'll go into other contemporary issues. But IE is now the largest identitarian group in the United States, and it appears to be growing and increasing. It appears to be a growing and increasingly viable group. How'd that happen, Patrick?
Well, Identity Europa was founded in May of 2016 by Nathan D'Amigo. Nathan departed 6 to 8 months ago, around then, on good terms to focus on a few situations he had going on in his private life. Wish him the best, and he can always return if he likes. But he created this organization to be, I believe, the first of its kind, the first identitarian group in America. And as identitarians, we're focused on issues like identity, race, demographics, and immigration. And Nathan's model was part activism, part networking, right? So we do activism, but we do have a rich social network behind the scenes. And I took over in late November of 2017, and I basically kind of continued what Identity Europa was doing, but I fine-tuned some things. I definitely look to expand the kind of the infrastructure within the organization that we have. And we're growing. We have more members now than ever. The demonstrations that we do field more members than ever before, and we've gotten some pretty big media appearances in the past 6 months, and we're basically looking back on a very successful year.
Well, it's certainly remarkable. So not only has this organization been able to survive and indeed thrive and grow while overcoming the obstacles that are well known to most of the listeners of this program, the obstacles that so many of us face, censorship and repression and deplatforming. But in addition to that, this was a relatively new group that has already had a couple of changes in leadership, but the train kept rolling, and I find that as remarkable as anything. What was the glue that held it all together during this infancy while you were transitioning from Nathan and then another and then to you, Patrick?
Well, I think we've just attracted solid people, and we've placed a large emphasis on the local meetup. So this isn't—it's not as if people get together, you know, once every few months to do a larger demonstration. No, people are getting together every weekend to go out to dinner, to go to museums, to train martial arts, to and then of course do activism as well. So people have become great friends in the organization. We do accept female members as well, so we have facilitated a number of relationships and at least one marriage that has resulted in a kid. So it's been...
Hey, that could be the greatest accomplishment.
Right. Yeah, maybe that kid will grow up and save us from whatever situation we're in. But on a more serious note, it is it is good to be able to bring people together. And something that I've stressed to people is that we need to be getting to know each other as well as we can, because this is we have no idea how long we're going to need to be doing this. And if you look at any committed group of people that's ever affected a serious amount of social change, I mean, they know each other quite well. So I think that part of it has been that we've encouraged people to get together and to become friends. And the other aspect of it too is that we have a very positive atmosphere in Identity Europa. There's no berating people. There's no talking down to people. If someone's out of line and they need to be corrected, sure. But we keep it very positive. We're very optimistic. We have to be, because there are many forces aligned against us, and we've faced a number of obstacles since Charlottesville. I inherited all of that, and I don't regret it at all. But yeah, basically positivity, making sure that people are forming relationships and staying active, staying out of the drama, just focusing on doing actions at the local level and at the national level every few months.
Well, it's a multifaceted organization by all accounts, and as Patrick was just mentioning, it's an organization that is, of course, engaged in political activism, and you see that with the flyering and the pamphleting that they do. They don't shy away from media attention, but at the same time, they exist to nurture foster a sense of community as well. And so they have these retreats and they have conferences. They build relationships. It really is something that can positively affect our people in any number of ways. But it is important, I think, first and foremost, to develop that community. So many people in this movement have that community that exists virtually only. And with mm-hmm. through Identity Europa, they can find that in real life as well.
Absolutely. People are more alienated now than arguably ever, but certainly more alienated now than they have been in the past about 6 decades or so. Robert Putnam famously wrote the book Bowling Alone, which outlined the decline in community in America, and virtually everything he measured has plummeted since the 60s. So it's not as if, it's obviously the case that developing these views, which are somewhat controversial, that can create a sense of alienation, right? You realize you can't talk about these things that you grow to feel very strongly about around perhaps family and friends. That's not always the case. Certainly not around your employer, with exceptions, of course. But, that can be alienating and isolating. But then on top of that, you throw in all of these greater structural changes that have resulted in people overall, regardless of their political affiliation, being far more alienated and isolated than ever before. So that's one of the things I've tried to stress since taking over is like, look, you're providing something to people that they might not be getting anywhere else. And while, we're not terribly interested in people who are, so isolated and disconnected from society that they've become, poorly adjusted and whatnot. But I think there is a need for something like this. There is a need for a revival of community.
Hold on right there, Patrick. This is AM Radio, so we do have to take a couple of breaks. We are going to learn more about the organization, how you can inquire to become a member of the organization. We're also going to talk to Patrick this hour about immigration, about Trump. He just did a great segment on Red Ice about that. So much more to come with Patrick Casey. Stay tuned.
Anyone who challenges their control is deemed a sexist, a racist, a xenophobe, and morally deformed. They will attack you. They will slander you. They will seek to destroy your career and your family. They will seek to destroy everything about you, including your reputation. They will lie, lie, lie. And then again, they will do worse than that. They will do whatever's necessary. The Clintons are criminals. Remember that. They're criminals.
I'm going to open up our libel laws so when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles, we can sue them and win lots of money. We're going to open up those libel laws.
each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, tilt things in their direction.
There's no voting for it.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight.
Well, if there was ever a time of year that you felt a need to develop and foster a sense of community with your kinsmen, I believe Christmas time is that time. And thankfully, we have groups out there that are doing that, Identity Europa at the forefront of it. Patrick Casey, it's executive director, on with us tonight. He's also, of course, a contributor to Red Ice. And Patrick, we were talking, of course, about all of the attributes of Identity Europa, and you mentioned in passing, and I should have reiterated it a moment ago, about the community service. Now, I want to be clear what you're talking about here to the audience. Is, you actually have members that go out into public parks, into public other public venues, and clean up help protect our natural environment as well as our racial environment. And that leads me to my next question. Political environment, indeed. You are talking about practicing identity politics for European-derived people. We've touched on it, but let's get specific. How exactly does Identity Europa do that?
Well, we are primarily engaged in activism. That is our activism is our telos. That is how we spread the message. That is how we recruit people to the organization. As far as the types of activism that we do, well, I think kind of the bread and butter is flyering. That's something you probably see the most of if you go to Twitter, just because it's very straightforward and it's effective. It is a great way to recruit people, to let them know that we are in their neck of the woods. I look at our applications quite often, and people say that they saw flyers either in person or on social media. So we'd have to be really stupid to stop doing that. However, we do larger actions as well. We've done dozens of banner drops since I've taken over. And these have been, some of them as long as 100 feet. We do flash demonstrations, too. That's kind of our main public form of activism at this point. We've kind of seen that if you announce where you're going to be, it's going to turn into a giant, just a giant disaster. And the number of people who want the media and Antifa to come and, mess with them while they do activism, I'm a little, I don't really mind, but the number of people after Charlottesville who really want to go through all that kind of stuff again is very small. So we do flash demonstrations, which means that we don't announce where we're going to be. For example, in late July, we went to, we did a few actions in Manhattan. One of them was downtown Manhattan. We went to the Mexican consulate there, and with somewhere between 50 to 60 people, we did a demonstration for about half an hour, and you know, in which I was there with the megaphone, giving a speech, talking about, you know, how illegal immigration is harming the country, talking about the attacks on this country's historical demographics and whatnot. And yeah, very powerful when you have people out there, one person on the megaphone, you have a lot of people chanting, very high energy. And of course, there are going to be people that, you know, it was about 50-50 in that action. Half of the people walking by or driving by were supportive, actually. And the other half were, yeah, they were flipping us off. They were, one guy was holding up his book on Stalin. And very, very funny thing happened when you go out there and do that. But yeah, the point is that is a very effective form of action. And that particular action that we did elicited somewhat of a geopolitical response. The Mexican government wrote a formal complaint to the U.S. State Department complaining that our demonstration had somewhat functioned as somewhat of a wedge between America and the U.S. during a time of strained diplomatic relations. And to that I say, fantastic. The failed state of Mexico has been sending us their undesirables, people that they don't really want there, for far too long. And it's unacceptable. And it's time that I think Americans and the American government should be a little more upset about this. So that's just one example of the types of of a flash demonstration. Our most recent one was Defend the Rockies. You can find all of this on our social media, on our YouTube. And we went to Civic Center Park in Denver, Colorado, and with 50 to 60 people, did a fairly large demonstration as well.
Well, folks, let me tell you something. If you believe that the sizzle is as important as the steak, if the packaging is as important as the product, then Identity Europa is doing it the right way. What they do with the flyering, with the pamphleting, everything is so aesthetically pleasing. I don't think there's been a group that has done it as well. Everything is just top-notch, first-rate, and the presentation is incredible. They did something here in Memphis that was so moving to me about a year ago this time when the Nathan Bedford Forrest Monument was removed. They did just a candlelight vigil there with a projection screen, and we had one of your members, Patrick, from Tennessee, on not too long ago, and I made mention of this, and of course I tweeted it out the night of, but everything they do is just as good as it can possibly be done, and they do it all over the country, north, south, east, and west. You're talking about these flyering on the college campuses. They are on, it seems, everywhere. They're absolutely everywhere. Now, Patrick, we're going to give, before you leave tonight, we're going to give the contact information for Identity Europa, how people can join, but it's not as easy as they may think, and we'll get into that in just a moment. But I've got a lot of questions for you that have come in from the audience. So we only have a couple of minutes left this segment. I'm going to try to get two of these questions in, so I would ask you to just be brief in your answers so we can cover as much as we can with the time that we've got left. Question from a listener. Would you ever consider changing the name of Identity Europa to a more American-oriented name, such as American Identity?
Well, that's a very frequent question, and I understand why people ask that, but I can't, I can't really comment as to whether or not that's, something we've considered and so forth, but I think there are definitely pros and cons.
Fair enough. Identity Europa's position on the Jewish question.
Well, Jewish people have their own identity, and they it's something distinct from ours. There are Jewish people like Stephen Miller who are against globalism, and I'd say, great. There's definitely room in the broader populist movement for people who, of all races and backgrounds, who oppose globalism and oppose progressivism and so forth. But within Identity Europa, it is solely for people of European heritage.
That's a fantastic answer. I appreciate that. Now, this one is one that we can spend a little more time on. We don't have to engage in any brevity here because it is a pretty wide topic, and it is, I believe, the most important topic of our age, of our time. So we can start it now. We can carry it over through the break. The music's going to start here in just a second. But if you had complete control over the immigration policy of this country, what would it look like?
Well, I think we need to reduce legal immigration first and foremost. We need to reduce it, I'd say, down to bringing in maybe 100,000, 200,000 people per year, if that. And those need to be overwhelmingly people of European heritage. Perhaps some of the hardliners would take issue with me saying that I'm not against, you know, the occasional, Asian physicist or something of that sort coming in. If he's someone who's top-notch and has a ton to offer and is going to, you know, help out what we're doing in America, sure, that's fine. I think most countries have had minority populations historically. But, yes, when it comes to, you know, the H-1B Indians, when it comes to cheap labor, that's not anything I'm interested in. So overwhelmingly, our immigration policy should favor European immigrants, white immigrants, as it has basically up until 1965, when we were told that it wasn't going to alter our, you know, nation's historical ethnic and racial demographics. But other than that, yes, I do think we need a wall, but perhaps even more important than a wall, we need a national E-Verify system to punish these employers who are cheating American workers. We need to deport all illegals. We need to end birthright citizenship. We need to stem the refugee flow. And those are just some of the few things that few places that we would begin at.
We're going to pick up on the issue of immigration when we return. An interview that is flying by with Patrick Casey, Executive Director of Identity Europa. Back on TPC, we're going to talk about immigration and segue directly into the president. We'll be back.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999, text F-I-G-H-T to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com, defendapatriot.com.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
I know that one, Sam. Sam is playing DJ there at the Network Studio in Utah, and that is one from the Four Seasons Christmas album. I don't know if anybody else listening to this particular broadcast tonight would know that, but I do because I have that CD. And in fact, what would you think it is right now? It's in the car, as you know. But anyway, let's get back to more important business. Patrick Casey, Executive Director of Identity Europa. Now, don't worry about it, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to give you all that contact information. We're not going to forget to do that. But first, we're going to pick up on the issue of immigration. Patrick, I've said on this show and in other interviews that I've given that Trump's legacy, at least for the people who actually voted for him, will begin and end at the border. And to date, it's really been a mixed bag. I mean, how do you grade Trump? Do you grade President Trump versus candidate Trump? Do you grade him against what would have happened under a Jeb Bush or a Hillary Clinton presidency? You, of course, just did a 3-minute video installment for Red Ice in which you assessed the president. So we could really just play that whole thing because it was brief, but it was also powerful. Can you break down to the audience what you had to say in that particular video if they haven't seen it yet?
Yeah, well, I think most of us, or many of us at least, were fairly optimistic going into Trump's first term at the beginning. You know, we were kind of riding the wave of the election. There was an incredible amount of energy. I've never experienced anything like that.
But I agree.
I think as time went on, we started realizing that things weren't playing out as we expected. There were a number of scares that thankfully didn't turn into disasters, right? You had the few strikes in Syria. We thought there was going to be invasion, regime change. Well, it didn't happen, and so forth. But yeah, look, we have to face the facts that, you know, I was fairly circumspect for the first half of Trump's first term. I did write articles and tweets here and there that were critical of certain things that I thought he was doing wrong, things I disliked, things I wanted to see. But you know, there was still kind of a sense of hope back then. Now, after losing the House, I don't know how much hope is left for the kind of legislative change that we need to accomplish the MAGA goals, right? Restricting legal immigration, ending birthright citizenship, building the wall in particular. I mean, the wall has just become so iconic that, you know, if it doesn't happen, it seems like it's going to be hard for Trump to run on. Is he going to run on building the wall in 2020? I mean, it's pretty absurd. But yeah, look, I think any criticism of Donald Trump's point should be qualified by pointing out what he's up against. He is up against an adversarial judiciary. He's up against a mainstream media that is immensely powerful at manufacturing outrage. He's also up against the mainstream political establishment that hasn't been very, very fond of the idea of helping him accomplish his goals. So it's not as if it's all his fault, but I think the right way to understand this is that he is in a den of vipers. He's up against so many forces. There are so many forces that are working to thwart his agenda, but he does have a bit of agency as well. It's not all structural. There is agency as well, and I think I think he could have done things differently. I do, and you know, one example is the birthright citizenship thing, right? Didn't he float the idea of doing an executive order to end that? And we haven't seen it. So I feel like he's been up against a lot, right? But he still could be doing more. Now, I think what he needs to do going forward leading up to the campaign to be reelected and so forth is doing everything that he can, shutting down the government when they don't give him the money for the wall. And I just saw,
yes,
that, you know, yeah, it's there's a lot to go into, but basically he needs to fight and he needs to show that he is fighting. And executive orders, refusing to play ball with what they're doing, investigating Antifa, right? We thought we were going to see that. It seems like there have been more investigations and crackdowns on right-wing groups than on the left, which is utterly absurd. So I don't know what's going on, but I'll vote for him again in 2020 if no one else is offering anything close to what, you know, he's offering. I'd rather have the potential of good things happening than voting for, Jeb Bush or
Patrick,
God knows who. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say that is the most even-keeled and sober response to a question about Trump, because it seems as though too many people get too high or too low based upon what Trump has done sure. that day. And I think what you right. just said really mirrors what I said. And I actually just said something quite similar on an interview that I gave to the After Party on YouTube just a couple of days ago. But I also said this, that it would be nice to have an assist from Trump. And if he runs again, well, obviously when he runs again in 2020, I imagine I will vote for him. But at the same time, our race is bigger than Trump. What we're fighting for is bigger than Trump. And I believe that regardless of what Trump does or does not do for us, his base, it's still going to be okay. I don't think Europeans and European Americans are going to exit the stage from history. And I think that what's going to happen, how it's going to happen, I'm not entirely sure. But what I am sure of, what I'm fairly confident of, is that we are going to prevail. And they say, then how's it going to happen? What do we do to make it happen? Well, if we had that answer, certainly we would implement it. But what I say to sure. that question is this: you don't have to have all the answers, but what you do have to do is become engaged, become involved, and through that exchange of ideas, that debate, that exchange of tactics, solutions will present themselves. And of course, just a couple of years ago, we didn't even have an Identity Europa. And now here you are, and look at all the good work that's happening. Things will come forward that we can't predict or foresee. And somewhere in that future, in that uncertain future, is our salvation. Would you agree with all or part of that?
Yeah. I think I'm fairly pessimistic in the short term, but in the long term, I do think there's going to be the kind of shift that we are looking for. And you're absolutely right. If anyone that's telling you that they know exactly how things are playing out, well, they're not being entirely honest. People can take guesses as to how we can remedy the situation. It doesn't hurt to float different scenarios. But I think the thing that we learn from history is that bringing people together, building social capital, building strong bonds of well-adjusted, intelligent, and dedicated people is a prerequisite for doing for having these kinds of changes occur in society. And so we're doing that, and also a big part of that is putting out content. So people in the dissident right need to either participate in either of those endeavors, the content creation or the networking, or they need to support people who are doing that. It's unacceptable to know what's going on, to know what's at stake, and to not offer any support. And I know a lot of people don't have money, they don't have time. It's fine, just give, $5 to $10 per month to James Edwards, to Amran, to IE, at the very least. But I think that's the best model that we can look towards for the future. Now, eventually, once we've built up, we've amassed enough capital and solid enough infrastructure in the dissident right, then I think opportunities will start to present themselves.
Exactly. I agree. That's what I say. And everybody can do something. Not everybody can be out front, but everybody can support their organization or outlet of choice. And certainly we need that. Now, we're going to hold you over through the next break. We're going to get that contact information for IE. But first, and we may run into the wall right now. If we do, we'll carry over. You actually appeared on the very first show of this year. What we did in that particular episode, it was the first show of the year, the first Saturday of January, and we had 8 different individuals on to give us their predictions of how 2018 would unfold and what successes we could expect to have. And the people that we featured on that particular show were Richard Spencer, Kyle Bristow, Henrik Palmgren, Jared Taylor, Michael Hill, yourself, Patrick, Sam Dixon, and David Duke. Now, I don't remember what everybody said on that show as to how 2018 would unfold, but all I can tell you for sure is that they were not all correct. I would ask you now to assess the current year. Where have we made progress? Where have we suffered setbacks?
Well, I can't comment too much on the broader movement. It seems that some organizations and entities, individuals are no longer really active. Others seem to be doing very, very well.
Just in general, as our people, how have we improved and how have we been set back in this year?
I've seen globally, there have certainly been some optimistic happenings, right? You have Matteo Salvini in Italy, you have Bolsonaro in Brazil. I think the wave of populism that is sweeping the Western world is coming along fairly well. Now, even with Trump, Trump has been somewhat disappointing recently, perhaps since he's been in office. But I think that things are moving in the right direction. So, you know, we're still facing the Charlottesville fallout. We're still embroiled or rather entrenched in this Sines versus Kessler case, the Charlottesville lawsuit, which has been a huge headache. But, you know, I think good things are on the horizon. I think we just need to keep our heads down, keep doing the right thing, learn the lessons that we should have learned over the past year or so.
Well, that's an interesting answer. I am known typically as a glasses half full type guy, happy warrior, and I have a generally positive disposition. So it's good to hear you say that even now we're in better shape than perhaps we were a year ago. We'll be right back.
Right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Now, Mr. and Mrs. Sir Galahad, what seems to be the problem?
Well, it's just not working.
She's been very unrealistic.
Really?
Ever since he rescued me from the dragon, we've been drifting apart.
That's not true.
We were supposed to live happily ever after.
Now, this isn't a fairy tale.
At first, he was gallant and chivalrous, opening doors for me, holding my chair, taking my arm.
All right, I'm not as young as I used to be.
He simply isn't the man who swept me off my feet.
Well, you're not as young as you used to be.
Mr. Sir Galahad, maybe if you started by just holding Mrs. Sir Galahad's hand when you're together.
Really?
Yes, try it.
Okay.
All right, go on, take her hand. Careful, little oil.
Marriage. You're never too far apart when you're still holding hands. From your neighbors, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Now, look into each other's eyes. That's right, raise your visor.
Oh, they're blue, dear.
For more tips on strengthening your marriage, visit family.mormon.org.
I reinstated a policy first put in place by President Ronald Reagan, the Mexico City policy. I strongly supported the House of Representatives' pain-capable bill, which would end painful late-term abortions nationwide. And I call upon the Senate to pass this important law and send it to my desk for signing. We are protecting the sanctity of life and the family as the foundation of our society. And most importantly of all, it is the gift of life itself. That is why we march, that is why we pray, and that is why we declare that America's future will be filled with goodness, peace, joy, dignity, and life for every child of God.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
All right, everybody. Christmas just a couple of weeks away. Very special, very spiritual time for Europeans. Patrick Casey, Executive Director of Identity Europa. Patrick, with just a couple of minutes remaining, there has been, of course, just to continue on, we were talking about before the last break, and then we're going to get that contact information for how people can support and join IE. Considerable amount of blackpilling from, I think, the... well, how do I want to put this? Trump falling short of the promise, I guess. The energy that you mentioned has dissipated to some extent, but still you would say that we are better off now than we were a couple of years ago and that there are better times on the horizon.
Oh, we're absolutely better now. We're absolutely in a better spot now than we were prior to Trump coming along. Trump got people thinking about issues like immigration and that encouraged many people to dig deeper. And that's why kind of the alt-right rose up. That's why Identity Europa came about and was able to capitalize on the energy of the 2016 election. And, it's spread globally, right? So I think the wave of populism is only going to increase. And, again, Trump pointed out the enemies, too, the deep state, right, the media, the academic system, Antifa. How many white conservatives knew what Antifa was prior to Trump coming along? They got a rude awakening there, just thinking they could go to a peaceful rally in support of a presidential candidate, with their families. And then they were kind of awakened to the reality of Antifa. But, yeah, I think things are better in that regard. I think it's going to fluctuate, right? There are going to be good times and bad times ahead, but we just have to resign ourselves to that. It's not just going to be, there are going to be the white pills, there are going to be the black pills, but I think overall we'll be able to look back in 5 years and see that we're in a better spot then than we are now.
That's right. Incremental progress. It didn't happen overnight. It's not going to be reclaimed overnight. That may sound cliche, but it's also true. Patrick, 60 seconds or less on this one. This wasn't in my pre-show notes for you, but I feel obligated to ask you with regard to it being certainly a major national news story this weekend. Your thoughts on the Fields verdict? I know you've tweeted out about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't have high hopes for I didn't think it was likely that he was going to get acquitted or even get a lesser charge. First-degree murder implies that it's premeditated. I think that it's absurd to suggest that he was premeditated, that his act was premeditated, rather. Again, I don't know what went through this kid's head when he did that. I just didn't see any evidence that he planned to turn down that street to do those things. I mean, it was a total disaster. And regardless of what he went through his head, regardless of what he was thinking, what he intended or didn't intend to do, the people who are responsible for any and all violence that occurred on that day in Charlottesville, it's not James Fields. It's basically the establishment. It's the people who told the police to stand down. It's the city of Charlottesville. The Heafy report was very, very clear about that. So, you always have to temper any discussion on Charlottesville, what happened, who did things wrong on the right or left with that, had the police done their job, none of this would have happened.
That's right.
I wouldn't say it would have been uneventful, but it would not have been nearly as eventful in the way that it has been, were that the case.
That's another great answer, Patrick, and that's the way any sensible and thinking man or woman would see it, and I appreciate you saying that. Now, contact information for IE. I would ask you this, put it all in together and wrap it up for us. What are the goals for IE going forward as we move into the next current year, and how can people join? And it's not as simple as they may think because there is a pretty stringent vetting process and not everybody makes it through the net.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are our goals? Well, we have membership goals. We're looking to hit 1,500 members by this time next year. I think we can absolutely do that. We're looking at getting setting up a headquarters in the D.C. area. We already have plans to do that in early spring, actually, so not too far away at all. We want to be out of this Charlottesville lawsuit. We want to have fully demonstrated that we didn't do any of the things they're alleging, and we haven't. There's no evidence for it. There are many other things I can go into as well, but those are some of the main ones. Continue doing large actions. Continue taking media appearances that, like the Today Show, work out in our favor. We don't want to be used by the media. We want to be very selective and use the ones that are going to amplify our message. But as far as the contact information, you can go to identityeuropa.com if you would like to offer financial support, and which we absolutely need, given that we are paying thousands of dollars per month for legal defense for the Charlottesville lawsuit. identityeuropa.com/donate. If you'd like to join us, I would encourage you to go to identityeuropa.com/apply to fill out an application. And as you said, James, we do have fairly selective standards, right? We are interested in people who are well-adjusted and well-intentioned. We're not as picky when it comes to class, and like you don't have to like dress suits all the time. I feel like we're strawmanned quite often by people who perhaps aren't debating in good faith. But yeah, we just need people who are well-intentioned, well-adjusted, and on the same page with, you know, what we're doing. We're not a paramilitary organization. We're not, you know, a neo-Nazi group. We're not anything like that. So people who are misled into thinking that that's what we're about are people we turn away. So if you want to create a better world for our people, for people of European heritage, you want to fight back against globalism, and you don't have any tattoos on the face, neck, or hands, because that is the standard that Nathan set, and I see no reason to remove. Not that it makes you a bad person if you have the tattoos there. It's just not what we're going for. So, yeah, those are the basic standards. You also can't be obese. Be a little bigger, that's okay, but you can't be fat, obese. We need people who are positive, who are taking care of themselves, and serious about you know, making things better, both for, you know, their own lives and for our people overall. So that's basically, you know, one more thing too is Twitter is where we do most of our, post most of our content. So twitter.com/identityeuropa. I would go ahead and give us a follow there if you're interested in keeping up with, what we're doing on a daily basis.
Or twitter.com/Patrick Casey, if I'm not. Well, let me make sure. I got it right here.
Patrick Casey, IE.
At Patrick Casey, IE. Patrick Casey, IE. Thank you, Patrick, for that. And listen, let me tell you, we've, of course, I think I've been on with you on some joint Red Ice appearances a time or two. We bumped into each other at Amren and exchanged pleasantries. Yep. And, of course, you were on earlier this year for that first of the year show where we showcased a number of different personalities. This is our first deep dive with you. It should have happened before now, but I'm thankful it happened tonight, and I thoroughly enjoyed it and look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thank you, James. I'm a big fan of your program. I think you do great work. A very intelligent guy. He's got a good head on his shoulders, and I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you for having me on.
I hope it helps, and I hope it helps IE, and thank you so much for the kind words, and of course, that's reciprocated to you tenfold. Patrick Casey, everybody, Identity Europa. We'll talk to you again soon. Patrick, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
And the same to you, James.
All right, Patrick Casey, everybody, there he goes. Identity Europa, support them, join them, and be part of a winning solution. Patrick Casey. Great interview, and we had him on for nearly the entire hour, and with that, we will bring on back right now, as soon as I can adjust his mic to the appropriate level, Keith Alexander, who has been sitting in here. Keith, of course, will be with us for the third hour as well. Eddie is out tonight. Eddie was a little under the weather, so Keith is pulling double shifts this evening. And in the third hour, we're going to have Rich from Nashville. He's going to be talking about Simon Roche's appearance on behalf of Saintlanders there at the European Union, the Parliament of the EU. Big story there. Simon, a great friend of TPC. We're going to be talking about that in the third hour. And more with Rich and Courtney from Alabama on the James Fields verdict in the third hour. And Keith will be sitting in with us for that. But Keith has been sitting in with us for this Patrick Casey interview, though he was listening rather than contributing. Keith, your reaction to it with only a minute or two remaining this hour.
Well, I think.
I got to turn you way
up. Where am I?
There you go. You're about right now.
Okay. Well, I think Identity Europa is filling a vacuum that needs to be filled. We need to be very adamant about claiming our right to engage in identity politics. As I've said many times before, when white people are prohibited or self-censoring about engaging in identity politics, basically what we're doing is bringing a knife to a gunfight. Nothing is as effective for promoting our interests as a group as identity politics, and trying to skirt around the issue the way the neocons do and say that we are for freedom, we're for liberty, we're principled, we don't, you know, and race is verboten. That's a strategy for losing, and not only losing, but being destroyed. So this is very important. I think there seems to be a kind of preference for younger people in this organization. I think they probably need to rethink that. They need to get, quite frankly, we need all the help we can get in this fight for survival, and that's also the money tends to be.
Are you saying you want to join, Keith?
I was at, when they're talking about you can't be fat and this and the other, and I looked at
you. Well, you're certainly not that.
Yeah, but I was thinking about bald.
Well, too much testosterone. I already told you about
that's
that.
Right. Yeah, that's it. But anyway, I think that also when talking about why Trump has been a disappointment, it's real easy, in my opinion. It's that he has not drained his own swamp. He's continuing to rely on what we call the usual suspects around here. And until he starts getting white Gentiles from flyover country in positions of authority, nothing's going to change. You're going to have a group of fifth columnists in there sabotaging him. So let's hope that he sees that. And I think that they're within the members of his own family. That would be Jared and Ivanka specifically.
All right, we'll be back. Rich from Nashville, Courtney from Alabama, third hour next. Radio Network.